So our process is hearing, chanting, and remembering. So remembering is the perfection and the nectar of instruction. It mentions different levels of perfection, beginning with Shravana Dasa. Dasa means level of perfection. And next is Shravana Dasa, then Varna Dasa, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So Varnam Dasa means the state of acceptance. After hearing thing, to accept it. But in between hearing and accepting is more or less. So first we hear about something, then we try to see it, what we've heard. Unless we can see it, then we can't really accept it. So first we try and hear, then we try and hear in such a way as we can actually see what we're hearing. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ukramantam stitim vapi bunjana vagunan vitaha vimuro nanupashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. That the foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So we're trying to train our eyes with knowledge so we can actually see what's being described. So first we're hearing, then we're trying to see what we heard. And if we can actually see what we've heard, then the next stage is Varna Dasa, to accept it. Because we can see what we heard and we can think, well, that's not what I like. I don't want that. Better to go back to sleep. I was better off when I couldn't see what I was hearing. But then we have to accept it, and the state of acceptance means that we follow it. We actually perform we live according to it. That's Varna Dasa. And the symptom of living according to it, then we actually become enthusiastic. Not only we live according to it, but we accept it wholeheartedly. That's called kirtan. Because we can follow it mechanically, but actually what we're hearing about is love, bhakti. So that means we have to do it wholeheartedly, and that's kirtan, glorifying the activity. And then by such glorification, then we come to the stage of smaranam. Smaranam Dasa, which means that we actually realize, we experience what we've been hearing, what we've been trying to see, what we've accepted, what we're trying to follow, what we're trying to become enthusiastic about. Then we come to the platform of realization. Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. Krishna says, then I give the understanding by which one can come to me. So Smaranam Dasa has five different stages, known as hearing, or as it says, the stage of Shravanam, which means Dharana, which means contemplation. Just like we hear something, or we remember something, then we may think something about it, we may wonder about it, then we may actually meditate on it. That's called Shravanam, Kirtana, Smarana Dasa. So first there's hearing, remembrance, then there is absorption, then meditation, then we actually contemplate and meditate on the object, then the meditation expands and is called Anusmriti. Then we come to the platform called, essentially what happens is that we can remember Krishna, because Smarta Vyaksadatam Vishnu, Vismarta jati na kinchit sarva vidhi nisedyasyor etyor eva kinkara. That the whole idea is always remember Krishna and never forget him. So gradually, as our meditation increases, then it's just like being in a movie. We can see first we remember Krishna interruptedly, and our meditation is mixed with other kinds of ideas. But then gradually we were able to see Krishna's form, we're able to see Krishna's associates, we're able to see Vrindavan, we're able to feel the presence of the associates, we're able to experience their moods, their interchange of love between each other, then it becomes a multi-dimensional experience, and one's spiritual sense is awakened, and one can actually relish Vrindavan, or taste the presence of Vrindavan. First it comes ruchi, a little taste for that experience, which means that we're actually feeling Krishna's presence, sakti, attached to that feeling of Krishna and his associates, that we can't stop thinking of it. Day and night we're thinking of Krishna and his associates. And then comes bhava, that's when our natural identity awakens. So at first, the meditative Krishna, we don't have necessarily any idea what our particular relation with Krishna is. Simply we're watching or observing the different relationships in our meditation. So and such a meditation, all the relationships, practically speaking, are equally relishable because they're all absolute. Remember, it's not that it's something mystical that we're seeing something that no one else is seeing. Actually, we're seeing the same thing that everyone else is seeing. For instance, we may see a picture of Krishna coming home. One time I was in New Vrindavan, and Muralidhar called me over to his house because he had just painted this picture of Krishna coming home. That's Krishna, and he's running towards Mother Jasoda. Mother Jasoda has a multicolored sari on. It's hard to describe. It's partly brownish. She has a yellow, what's the top called? Top of the sari, what's that? The veil. The veil is yellow, and she has kind of a bluish, brownish sari, and she has her hands out, and Krishna has a little calf at his feet, and he's running towards Mother Jasoda's outstretched arms, and Nanda Maharaj is dressed in green, and he's right behind Mother Jasoda, and there is, on the background, there is the cowherd boy. One cowherd boy has a flag, and he's looking at another cowherd boy, and the third cowherd boy is looking directly at Krishna and Mother Jasoda as Krishna is running towards Mother Jasoda with his outstretched arms. And Krishna has a flower garland and a calf at his feet. And behind Nanda Maharaj, on the steps are made out of marble, and there is a balcony there in the background, and there is Srimati Radharani. She's holding one hand on this side. She's holding a plate with some offering to Krishna. And there's two other gopis also looking towards Krishna, running towards Mother Jasoda. And in the air there is one bird. And in the background there are a peacock. And there are so many different palaces where Nanda Maharaj lives. So he said, "What do you think of this?" I said, "Wow, that's fantastic." So we can meditate on that. That meditation is directly associating with Krishna and his associates. And as that meditation becomes deepened and we're able to visualize it, in the Brahma Samhita in his commentary, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada writes that Krishna is actually realized within the mind. Unless we put Krishna in the mind, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo, it's very hard to understand or experience what Krishna consciousness is. Krishna consciousness is actually realized as our meditation on these pastimes, the forms, the qualities, the pastimes of Krishna. As our meditation increases, that's how we actually realize what Krishna consciousness is all about. Whether it's an internal meditation or an external meditation, it makes little difference because they're both using our intelligence and seeing either Krishna without, how Krishna is working without, or seeing how Krishna is engaged in his pastimes within. Therefore, in the Nectar of Devotion, Srila Prabhupada writes that the mental activities of Krishna consciousness are either thinking of Krishna's activities on the battlefield Kurukshetra, which is more or less Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita means to see how Krishna is working, especially in this material world. How everything is flowing from Krishna, how Krishna is the super soul in everyone's heart. As Vijay Prabhu was saying yesterday, his favorite verse is Upadrasta Numanta Cha Bharata Bhokta Maheshwara Paramatniti Chapyuto Dehe Smin Purusha Para. that there's nothing but Krishna's pastime in the material world, that Krishna is the super soul, he's within the heart, and he's sanctioning all our desires. Not all of them, but whatever we deserve, he's sanctioning. Luckily, it's not all of them. And therefore the pastimes of the material creation go on. And internally, also on another level, we can think of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan or in his activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And the more these activities are either internally or externally, our meditation increases, so proportionally we actually understand what Krishna consciousness is all about. Therefore, the meditation, seeing the deity or seeing the pictures or visualizing what's being said is also a meditation. Just like one of my favorite pastimes of Krishna, it is said, when Krishna was seen walking on the bank of the Jamuna, he was seen nicely decorated with tilak on his forehead, and his body was smeared with the pulp of sandalwood and tulsi leaves. He was garlanded with different types of forest flowers. The bumblebees became mad after the treasure and sweet nectar of the atmosphere, and being pleased by the humming sound of the bees, Krishna began to play upon his flute. And the combined sounds became so sweet to hear that the aquatic birds, such as the ducks, the swans, and the cranes, stopped swimming and flying and became stunned. Then they closed their eyes and entered into a trance of meditation and worship of Krishna. So these pastimes, it says at the end, these pastimes and activities of Krishna remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. Such activities, pastimes, they give us some idea of how Krishna is attractive. That everyone, the bees, the birds, the cowherd boys, the gopis, Mother Jasoda, everyone, everything is attracted to Krishna. By constantly chanting Hare Krishna and remembering Krishna's transcendental pastimes, everyone can become fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness and therefore make his life sublime and fruitful. In other words, the more our meditation can increase, the more our consciousness of Krishna increases also. Therefore, our first business is to hear, shravana. But we should try to hear in such a way as we can see. So that's not so difficult, actually, as we may think. It just requires a little bit of effort, a little desire. Just like, for instance, in that pastime, when Krishna was seen walking on the bank of the Jamuna. So everyone has seen Krishna. Is that right? So we may remember our favorite deity, Radha Gopinath, for instance. If we can conceive a Gopinath walking on the bank of the Jamuna. Many of us have seen Jamuna, the river Jamuna, so we can remember what the river Jamuna looks like, blackish waters, and Krishna we can see walking on the bank, holding his flute with his peacock feather, his garland of forest flowers, with blue and red and yellow forest flowers, and his body smeared with his pulp of sandalwood and tulsi leaves. So this is a description of Krishna. And then, because of the sweet smell of the tulsi leaves, tulsi becomes fragrant at a certain time of the day, and the sandalwood also is smelling, and Krishna's body smells like what? Does anyone know? What's that? Oh, it's definitely sweet. It's called aguru. Aguru. It's a combination of camphor, sandalwood, and musk. Excuse me? Saffron doesn't. Saffron makes it yellowish. But I don't remember the saffron. Anyhow, we can't. The musk itself. Has anyone ever smelled musk? Just musk itself is so enchanting. And then you add sandalwood pulp and camphor. And maybe saffron too, I'm sure there's variety. And that's what Krishna's body smells like. And then you add the tulsi leaves, the sandalwood paste, plus the garland of the wild forest flowers. Am I supposed to smile? Hare Krishna. Okay. So you add all these things together and then breathe in and smell. We should actually try to smell Krishna's pastimes. We should also try not only see Krishna's pastimes, but smell what they smell like. Now we may breathe in and, you know, smell the room, but we should smell with our memory. Within our memories, maybe some of these smells are there, and then we should smell it. And if we smell with our memory, then our memory becomes Krishna eyes. Just like if we see Krishna walking on the bank of the Yamuna, then our remembrance of rivers becomes everything that we see in our meditation in connection with Krishna, all becomes spiritualized. Then if we hear the sound of the bumblebees, because they're mad after the treasure and the sweetness of the atmosphere, the nectar of the atmosphere. So what does a bumblebee sound like? No one has ever heard a bumblebee? There's a bumblebee. Yes. So generally, especially here during the summer when the hornets come out, or the wasps, it's not a very pleasant sound. It's the last thing you want to, you know, when you're taking prasadam, they all kind of gather around and you wonder whether you should be somewhere else. But if we remember the sound of that bumblebee buzzing around Krishna when he's playing on his, then Krishna plays on his flute. So we can hardly imagine what Krishna's flute sounds like, but we've heard flutes before. So if we try to remember the sound of the flute and the sound of the bumblebee, then our meditation gets more, even more deep. Then we can, the smell is there, the colors are there, the form is there, the sounds are there, the taste is there. Taste is there somewhere. I mean, actually we're tasting with our consciousness these different aspects. And the sounds become so sweet to hear that the aquatic birds, so we've seen swans, we've seen ducks, we've seen cranes, so they stop swimming and flying. So we can see a swan swimming and then suddenly stopping, hearing the sound of Krishna's flute, and they become stunned. And then they close their eyes and enter into a trance of meditation worship of Krishna. So that's called meditation. That's why Prabhupada gave us these books, is so we can meditate on them. At first we may not believe that there's such a thing as transcendental meditation. Therefore we should try and meditate on Bhagavad Gita and try and see through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita how Krishna is actually controlling the planets, how Krishna is in everyone's heart, how if we work without fruit of desire, without mental speculation, then our meditation on Krishna becomes possible. We should understand, see through the eyes of Bhagavad Gita. Then as our faith in Krishna increases, as we believe that there's no difference between the sounds about Krishna and Krishna himself, then we can actually concentrate our minds upon Krishna. So Prabhupada writes that the art of Krishna consciousness is the art of focusing one's attention and then giving one's love to Krishna. So this is how we give our love to Krishna. We think about him first. And then when we see it, we see how even these birds, and the bumblebees, they're completely absorbed in love for Krishna. Then we can also close our eyes and think about Krishna with the same feelings of love. We can learn from them, from the bumblebees, from the swans, the ducks, the cranes, and the gopis meditating on these particular residents of Vrindavan. We can learn from them how we can give our heart to Krishna also. And if we do that, then we'll feel the presence of all these personalities in Vrindavan, and our heart will be filled with pleasure. Ruchi at first, some ruchi, some pleasure, some taste, and then our heart will become more soft. And imperceptibly, our love for Krishna will grow more and more, and we'll develop an attraction, a taste, for these, hearing about these things. And then the taste will be, when it becomes very intense, then we have no taste for anything else except for either seeing Krishna outside, seeing how everything is Krishna's pastime, or thinking about Krishna's pastimes in his particular incarnations, especially in Vrindavan, or a Navadvip. So this is the song we're going to sing. Goranga Balite Habe. We're praying, when will the time come when my meditation will increase to such an extent that even involuntarily these sattvika bhavas will overwhelm my body, that I'll be so much absorbed in thinking about Krishna that my body will begin to tremble. When the ecstasy hits the body and disturbs the life air that's in the body, then the body begins to tremble. And when the ecstasy disturbs the fire element, then tears come to the eyes. Just like when it gets very hot, then sometimes there is rain. So when the different ecstasy overwhelms the body, the result is that there are different sattvika bhavas that manifest themselves. So we want to pray for that, but it's not just by chanting Hari or chanting Gauranga that it happens. We can shout Gauranga, but it's actually by developing, by hearing and practicing, developing the ability to absorb our consciousness more and more deeply in the name, form, quality, associates, and pastimes of Krishna. And when we become very much absorbed and very sensitive to those pastimes, then automatically the ecstasy, because Krishna's pastimes are all the nature of bliss. They're all the nature of pleasure. They're all nature of rasa. That's all that's going on. All the five bhavas are unlimitedly expanded in Krishna's pastimes. And Krishna's pastimes have manifested themselves in the form of Prabhupada's books. So the more we absorb our consciousness consciously in this literature and expand our remembrance of Krishna in that way, then the more actually our ability to experience these different types of rasa or bhavas culminating in rasa expands itself. So I said, especially in the stage of ruchi and asakti, taste and attachment, there is no need to even consider what our particular relationship is with Krishna. It is not that in order to experience these transcendental happiness of Krishna consciousness that one has to know one's particular rasa with Krishna. But one simply has to observe the residents of Vrindavan as they're engaged in their pastimes with Krishna, or observe the devotees as they're engaged in their service to Krishna with appreciation, and the result is that one will actually taste ruchi and asakti. And when these things become very much absorbed in these things, then Krishna, if he sees our qualification, then he reveals himself, and when he reveals himself, then we'll be able to understand more clearly what our particular rasa with Krishna is. Or, at the state of asakti, sometimes it says one understands one's relationship because one becomes very much attached to a particular mood of devotional service. But actually, at the state of bhava, one's actual mood is awakened. Then we can understand what we'll talk about at the end here for around 20 minutes. Then we'll be able to understand what love means, what it means to the fullest extent, at least our particular relationship. The residents of Vrindavan, their love for Krishna is completely transcendently sweet. It's completely innocent and loving. So here in the material world, since we don't have the experience of direct love for Krishna, or love for anything actually, it's hard to understand how Krishna, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his eternal associates can be completely innocent, childlike, and loving, without any reservation, without any false ego. So that's possible when one comes to the stage of bhava. So this is Gauranga Balite Habe Pulaka Sharir Hari Hari Bolite Naine Bhave Nir. So when will time come when chanting Gauranga's name, that my body will begin to shiver and when by chanting the name of Hari, the tears will come to my eyes. Then we're praying to Lord Nityananda. When will Lord Nityananda show me his mercy and all my material desires will seem insignificant? Because Lord Nityananda was always absorbed in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, who is always absorbed in the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. And when will the time come when my mind will become purified of all material desires and then I'll be able to see Vrindavan? And when will I follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis and therefore at that time I'll be, by reading their and studying their books, I'll be able to understand the transcendental pastimes of Radha and Krishna? And when will I develop a great eagerness to follow in the footsteps of the six Goswamis? Rupa Raghunatha Pade Rahu Mora Asha Prarthana Karye Sada Naratama Dasa. So Naratama Dasa, the core praise for the time when great eagerness will overcome him to follow the footsteps of the six Goswamis. Goranga balite abe pulaka charira hari hari balite nayane babe nira. Goranga balite abe pulaka charira hari hari balite nayane babe nira. Arakabeni taitande karuna oibe samsara vasana mora kame tuchabe. Arakabeni taitande karuna oibe samsara vasana mora kabe tuchabe. Vishaya chariya kabe shura kabe hama kabe hama herabo shi Vrindavana. Vishaya chariya kabe shura be mana kabe hama herava shri Vrindavana. Rupa Raghunatha Pare Hoy Be Akuti Kabe Hama Bhuta Bose Yugala Priti. Rupa Raghunatha Pare Aive Akuti Kabe Hama Bhuta Bose Sugala Priti. Rupa Raghunatha Pare Rahu Morai Pratana Koro Yesada Narottamo Dasa. Rupa Raghunatha Pare Rahu Marai Pratana Koro Yesada Narottamo Dasa. Goranga balite abe lakacharira hari hari balite nayane vabenira. Goranga bolite abe lakacharira hari hari bolite nayane babenira. Arakaveni taikande karuna oibe samsara vasana mora kabe tuchabe. Arakaveni taichande karuna oibe samsara vasana mora kabe tuchabe.
So
Srila Prabhupada writes in the Nectar Devotion that in the introduction, he explains about what bhakti is. Bhakti rasamrita sindhu. So bhakti means the, well, in other places Prabhupada says, the art of giving one's love. But bhakti means service, essentially. Service to Krishna. And rasa means mellow. Amrita means eternal. And sindhu means an ocean, as opposed to material sense gratification, which is chapalasukha, which means it's flickering and it's temporary. Limited also. It's chapalasukha. What's the other word that's used? It's, what's that? Bhogatyaga, that's right. Bhogatyaga means we alternate between sense gratification and renunciation because the taste doesn't long endure. And it's only, it's chapalasukha, it's only a very small amount of happiness as compared to an ocean of happiness, unlimited ocean. So then Prabhupada writes in the introduction, he especially goes over the fact that the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to distribute, well, here's the preface. Our loving propensity, in the primary stage, let's go back. The basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. This propensity is present in every living being. Even an animal like a tiger has this loving propensity, at least in a dormant stage, and is certainly present in the human being. The missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. At the present moment, the human society teaches one to love his country or family or his personal self, but there is no information where to repose the loving propensity so that everyone can become happy. That missing point is Krishna, and the Nectar of Devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. So love for Krishna means service. One time I sent Srila Prabhupada some money for his book fund, and Prabhupada wrote me back a letter and he said, thank you very much for this contribution of love. That this message of Krishna is coming down through the succession. I am simply one of the instruments, that we are all actually instruments of the predecessor acharyas. So please study all my books, and sometime afterwards you'll help have to carry on the disciple succession. In other words, Prabhupada saw that every effort to serve Krishna in some way was an act of love. As spiritual souls, we have the capacity to desire. We don't have the capacity to do anything else. So if we're desiring, due to good association with the devotees and the predecessor acharyas, we're desiring to do some service to Krishna, that's called love. The love may be mixed with other desires, but because we're desiring to serve the predecessor acharyas, there's some love there. And the, according to our Srimad Bhagavatam, Yatatura Mula Nishechinena, Triptyanti Tatskandabujo Pasaka, Pranaharatscha Yatendriyanam, Sarvahanam, Tataiva Sarvahanam Atuteja. Just like if we water the root of the tree, naturally the water goes to all the leaves and branches. Or by supplying food to the stomach, then naturally all the different parts of the body are served. So similarly, if we love Krishna, then, naturally, everyone else will become satisfied. They'll become benefited, even if they're not satisfied. Because Prabhupada writes also that maybe apparently Arjuna was certainly serving Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, whether the people he was shooting arrows through felt very pleased with Arjuna at that particular moment, that we may not know. But they were certainly benefited, because Arjuna was completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, the whole atmosphere became purified by his complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. So whether Arjuna was shooting arrows at people on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, absorbed in Krishna consciousness, or someone is offering artik to Krishna, absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the atmosphere becomes purified by the complete absorption of the devotee in Krishna consciousness. That this material world, as Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, is a transformation of Brahman. Krishna has different energies. One is called Brahman. And sometimes Brahman effulgence, Krishna's Brahman energy, is transformed because of the soul's desires to enjoy sense gratification. Krishna creates a material world for the soul. But when the soul utilizes his activities in the service of Krishna, the more the soul does that, the more he does, he works for Krishna and for Krishna alone, then the more the whole atmosphere becomes spiritualized by complete absorption in Krishna consciousness. In other words, the perfection of every activity, whatever we're doing, is somehow or another to do it for Krishna, to please him. And if we do it to please him, and it's an activity which is pleasing to Krishna, and Krishna becomes pleased, then everything becomes spiritualized. And what happens is that we can see everything as being Brahman. We can see every living entity as Krishna's servant. We can see how everything is Krishna's energy. We can actually remember Krishna everywhere. So this is if we give our energy, our desires to please Krishna, then everything becomes spiritualized as we remember Krishna. So the idea is that simply by serving Krishna, then the whole atmosphere becomes purified and we benefit everyone by bringing Krishna in our meditation, bringing his presence. So that missing point is Krishna, and the nectar of devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. In the primary stage, a child loves his parents, then his brothers and sisters, and as he daily grows up, he begins to love his family, society, community, country, nation, or even the whole human society. But the loving propensity is not satisfied even by loving all human society. That loving propensity remains imperfectly fulfilled until we know who is the supreme beloved. Our love can be fully satisfied only when it is reposed in Krishna. This theme is the sum and substance of the nectar of devotion, which teaches us how to love Krishna in five different transcendental mellows. Our loving propensity expands just as the vibration of light or air expands, but we do not know where it ends. The nectar of devotion teaches us the science of loving every one of the living entities perfectly by the easy method of loving Krishna. In other words, somehow or another, yena tena prakarena manak krishna niveshayat sarva vidhi nisedyasyor etir eva kinkara. That somehow or another, we have to fix the mind upon Krishna. And if the mind is fixed on Krishna, then whatever we're doing, well, if it's fixed on Krishna out of devotion, then whatever we're doing becomes perfect. So the nectar of devotion teaches us that Prabhupada says that in America, the richest country in the world, that people are frustrated because within the heart there's a burning fire for satisfying their desires. But he's appealing to such persons that if you simply take up the art of Krishna consciousness, then the result is that you'll become fully satisfied. It is not, Prabhupada says, that we have to give up material comforts. We can enjoy our material comforts, but we should at the same time take up the art of serving Krishna so that we can actually develop our dormant love for Krishna. So we have a few minutes here left. I'll just read something from this fourth chapter of Adi Lila about Krishna's first desire. So I am full, Krishna, this is Krishna speaking. I am the full spiritual truth and I made a full joy, but the love of Srimati Radharani drives me mad. I do not know the strength of Radha's love with which she always overwhelms me. The love of Radhika is my teacher and I am her dancing pupil. Her prema makes me dance various novel dances. Oh, my beloved Brinda, where are you coming from? I am coming from the feet of Sri Hari. Where is he? In the forest on the bank of Radhakund. What is he doing there? He is learning dancing. Who is his master? Your image, Radha, revealing itself in every tree and creeper in every direction, is roaming like a skillful dancer, making him dance behind. So this is Rathyatra, where we can see the love that Srimati Radharani has for Lord Krishna is such that it even makes Lord Krishna, in the form of Lord Jagannath, stop his cart and wait until Srimati Radharani catches up in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That without Srimati Radharani's loving feelings, then Lord Krishna cannot be satisfied. So we can just imagine how extensive her loving feelings are towards Krishna, that even Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, becomes subordinate to them. Whatever pleasure I get from tasting my love for Srimati Radharani, she tastes 10 million times more than me by her love. So Krishna has expanded himself in so many parts and parcels so he can love them. Because pleasure means to love. So Krishna enjoys his pleasure by loving the living entities, whether it's the residents of Vrindavan or the jiva souls here in the material world. Krishna has unlimited propensity to love. And he, serving the conditioned souls in this material world by giving them a material world to play in. And in the spiritual world, he plays in many different pastimes in all the different rasas. Although Krishna has no personal need to have queens in Dwarka or gopis in Vrindavan, but because of his love for the residents of Vrindavan, he acts in many different ways in order to satisfy them. So it's not that Krishna is simply indifferent to his transcendental pastimes. He's enacting them because they give him pleasure, and they give him pleasure because his pleasure comes from pleasing the residents of Vrindavan, from pleasing his different devotees and his different pastimes. So similarly, if we want to develop our happiness, then we have to develop our desire to please Krishna. The more we desire to please Krishna, the more we become aware of the reservoir of all loving propensities, and especially his internal energy, Srimati Radharani, the more we serve them, then the result is that our loving propensities awaken, then we can understand factually what real happiness means. That without awakening our loving propensity towards Krishna, then we also can't really enjoy happiness. So Srimati Radharani, her love is so extensive that it even overwhelms Krishna, although Krishna's love is so extensive it overwhelms all the residents of Vrindavan. And when Krishna comes from the pasturing grounds, as I mentioned before, at night, with his body covered with the dust from the calves and the cows, then all the residents of Vrindavan, they run out of their houses to get Krishna's association. And in the story of Nanda Gopakumara, then when Krishna turns to his friend, cowherd boyfriend, Sridham, and says, there is Gopakumara, Swarup, his name was Swarup, the best of your clan. Sridham, his sister is who? I think Sridham. Yeah, Srimati Radharani. So it's, if you're a member of Srimati Radharani's clan, you're certainly favored by Krishna. So Krishna ran towards Swarup, and then Swarup didn't know what was happening. He was completely bewildered. He had asked one old resident of Vrindavan, where is the son of Nanda Maharaj? And so the resident of Vrindavan said, well, he's coming very soon. And then suddenly he saw everyone get very excited. They were all running out of their houses, half-dressed, you know, completely ecstasy, running towards seeing Krishna coming on the path. And suddenly he sees all these cows, and he hears the flute, and he sees the cowherd boys, and he sees Krishna in the distance, and then Krishna runs towards him and embraces him around the neck. And then Krishna falls on the ground unconscious, and tears from his eyes start muddying the ground all around him. And Swarup is completely bewildered. He doesn't know what's going on. And so he falls at Krishna's lotus feet, and he puts his head to his lotus feet. And then he realizes that actually how soft Krishna's lotus feet is. He always heard how Krishna's lotus feet were very soft, but now with his head on his feet, he actually feels how soft Krishna's lotus feet are. And Krishna is just crying that this whole ground is getting muddied by his tears, and all the residents of Vrindavan gather around completely shocked. What happened to Krishna? That he's unconscious and, you know, the whole ground is muddied by his tears. And they see this cowherd boy by his feet. They never saw him before. They're wondering, who is he? What did he do to our Krishna? Maybe Kamsa has sent him and he's a sorcerer and he put Krishna under his spell. And so everyone becomes completely shocked, and there are, even the birds, they become stunned in horror, and they fall out of the sky. And all the deer get surrounded, you know, in the forest. They're all looking with tears in their eyes. Everyone is completely shocked. And then Balaram runs up, and he sees Krishna in this condition, all the residents of Vrindavan, completely horrified, and he becomes shocked. And then he looks and he sees Swarup, and then he figures what happened. Then he takes Swarup and he puts his arms around Krishna and tells him to lift Krishna up. So Swarup lifts Krishna up and says, Gopal, wake up. And then Krishna opens his lotus eyes and he sees Swarup, and then he kisses him and then smiles, and all the residents of Vrindavan become completely relieved. Then he takes him by the hand and walks, asks him about his welfare, how he's doing. And then Mother Jasoda sees that actually Krishna is very attached to Swarup, and then she becomes very attached to Swarup also. He becomes one of the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. So Krishna also has unlimited love for the residents of Vrindavan, as the residents of Vrindavan have for Krishna. So when we go back, if Krishna falls unconscious and tears in his eyes when he sees us, it will be quite a nice experience. Any questions? Yes. Swarup, that's the name of the cowherd boy. His name is Swarup. Swarup. The cowherd boy. That's his name. He's in Krishna Leela. No, he's not in Chaitanya Leela. He's Sanatana Goswami in his Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He's describing about this Gopakumara, this cowherd boy from the village of Vrindavan, and how he gradually goes from one level of consciousness to the next until finally he arrives in Goloka Vrindavan. So if you go to Goloka Vrindavan, you can meet him there. Who he is in Chaitanya's Leela, I don't know. But if you can meet him in Krishna Leela, I'm sure you'll be very happy. Anything else? So I'll just read a few more for the first. So Radha's love is all-pervading. There is no room for expansion, but still it is expanding constantly. There is nothing greater than her love, but her love is devoid of pride. That is a sign of its greatness. Nothing is purer than her love, but its behavior is always perverse and crooked. So that's the amazing thing about Radha's love. Although it's completely innocent and pure, but somehow or another she has this side of her where she's able to do these wonderful activities with Krishna, which seem to be very crooked and perverse, transcendentally crooked and perverse. Because that excites Krishna's love even more. If she was Chandravali, or Chandravali, Chandravali, that her love is very, also pure and completely innocent, but it's completely submissive. But Krishna, Radharani's love is very cunning. She's able to do things with Krishna that's even bewildering to Krishna. The way she glances at Krishna sometimes, the way she gets angry at Krishna, the way she rejects Krishna, the way sometimes she cries when Krishna touches her, that actually excites even Krishna's love for her even more, transcendentally. So this is also manifested in the material world in many different ways, perversely or reflectedly. that sometimes we find the same thing reflected in the material world. But that's Radharani's love is full of all different varieties. All glories of Radha's love for Krishna, the enemy of the demon Mura, although is all-pervading, it tends to increase at every moment. Although it is important, it is devoid of pride. Although it is pure, it is beset with duplicity. So this is a verse from the Dhanakeli Kamudi. So Sri Radhika is the highest object of the abode of that love, and I am its only object. I taste the bliss to which the object of love is entitled, but the pleasure of Radha, the abode of that love, is 10 million times greater. My mind races to taste the pleasure experienced by the abode, but I cannot taste it even by my best efforts. How may I taste it? So that's the first desire that Lord Krishna has, is to experience the love that Srimati Radharani has. Krishna has unlimited love for everyone, but Radharani's love is even millions of times greater than Krishna's love. So Krishna wants to taste what that love feels like, having that loving propensity. If sometimes I can be the abode of that love, only then may I taste its joy. Thinking this way, Lord Krishna was curious to taste that love. His eager desire for that love increasingly blazed in his heart. Yes. He does, through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Actually, he is the cause of everything. He made everything and everyone.
No, it's not exactly like that. He may be the cause of everything here in the material world, just like the sun is the cause of all the sunshine. But after the sunshine emanates, the sunshine is independent of the sun, although it still has its connection with the sun. So in the spiritual world, Krishna has manifested through his energies the spiritual world, but they all have their independence also. So his internal energy, Srimati Radharani, the loving propensity that he himself has, she's able to love Krishna more than he can love anything. Because that's the inconceivable energy, you know. It's his, the loving energy can expand more than Krishna can expand his loving propensity. In one sense, we can understand that just like Krishna is dividing his love in so many different ways, but Srimati Radharani's love is completely undivided towards Krishna. So Krishna, in order to experience what undivided love is towards himself, he manifests himself as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes. Krishna's mercy. Naham prakasha sarvasha yoga maya samavrita mudoyam nabijananti loko yam ajam avyam. So Krishna has his curtain covering of yoga maya. So that's covering our eyes so we don't see what's happening either here in the material world, and we may not see even the transcendental pictures. But sometimes Krishna lifts that curtain a little bit, then we're able to perceive what's going on. It's already going on, but whether we see it or not, that's a different thing. Just like one time Prabhupada was, I think he came to a temple, and he mentioned that he was seeing the deities, how Radha and Krishna were dancing. So we may see the deities, it doesn't look like they're doing anything. Others may see the deities, and they may talk to the deity, just like Sakshi Gopal. The Brahmin came and he said, my dear Sakshi Gopal, you know, you have to come as a witness. So he said, how can I do that? I can't come because deities can't walk. So the Brahmin said, wait a second. If you can talk, you can certainly walk. So he said, that makes sense. So he decided, all right, I'll come along. So we may think that the deities are stone statues, but actually they're living persons. We're the ones who are a little stone-like. They're completely alive. So So the more we become a little enlivened, or enlivened, enlightened, and enlivened, then the more we can see how the deities are actually living personalities. Not only the deities, you know, we'll actually see, and the deity Prabhupada, we'll actually see Prabhupada's right there in his Murti form. Not that it's some, you know, deity to remind us of Prabhupada, but it actually is Prabhupada. And all the previous acharyas are present in their pictures too. And Krishna is present in his pictures. All those pastimes are going on in those pictures. It's just a question of purification of heart, and then we'll be able to perceive it. And if we serve the deities, if we serve the pictures, if we serve the instructions of the spiritual masters coming down into simple succession, then they'll give us the vision to see these things. Anything else? Jai Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Bol.